This week in the markets, U.S. equities smashed to a 10-week winning streak on better-than-expected domestic economic news. Well, welcome back to GoldSeek.com Radio. Your host, Chris Walczek, here with you. Just a pleasure to be back for the Season 14, Episode 685 show. It was a big week for investors, particularly following the better-than-expected U.S. GDP number, as well as U.S. job numbers from the Labor Department. Of course, as I mentioned, stocks now at approximately 312% higher than the lows during the financial crisis a decade ago. It's just been a stunning three-month period where the NASDAQ has gained in about 2.5 months what would typically take 3 or 4 years to accumulate. Just a big month. So joining me with his outlook on the sector, former NFL player Bill Murphy of Gotta.org returns with his commentary on the precious metal sectors as well as palladium. We discuss how palladium, of course, now up about another $75 this week, despite the fact that most metals slumped just, I don't know, $100, $150 above gold. I mean, this is a epic story in and of itself. We outline how the amazing palladium story might tie in with AG silver. And then, of course, Dr. Burton Malkiel, Princeton University economics professor and author of A Random Walk Down Wall Street, the 12th edition, returns to the show. It's always a pleasure to have him back. He points out that 90% of actively managed funds fail to beat or even match the returns of basic indexed funds and ETFs. He shares all the interesting changes in this new 12th edition. And I'd like to make an interesting announcement here. This is a follow-up. The Ganesha project that we've had rolling now for, I guess, the better part of 2 months. I mean, my regular listeners will know that we've been working on a fast radio burst. Now, this is an extremely unusual signal that the Arecibo telescope, I mean, folks will remember that from the movie with Jodie Foster, of course, Contact, where they make contact and it changes the world. My small team has stumbled on to something that may just be that, folks. I can say with 95% confidence that we have identified, and this is not a joke, at least 12, well, let's say 10, extraterrestrial races. Their frontal images, profiles, and their voices directly connected to them. One of the more interesting ones actually sings with a band. Now, I know this sounds absurd, but I've spent the last few months working with, I think, some of the brightest engineers and scientists in the world. And we presented our findings to an academic journal, a really prestigious one, and we are now scheduled to be published. If you or anyone you know has a modicum of faith in this host or this 13-year show, may I suggest to you, urge you to contact me at gsradio@frontier.com. Let me call you by Skype or directly to your phone and try to relay some of the 20 or 30 videos that we have privately posted up on YouTube. And if you are unlisted and available right now at our webpage, can I suggest getting over to the webpage? View some of this, listen to some of this. Try to keep your jaw off the floor, because if I hadn't pulled it off, frankly, of course, with incredible help of these brilliant folks, I'd never believe it. My personal opinion, this is the greatest find and discovery ever. Nothing is 100%. This is as close to a 95% confidence interval that I have ever seen, and I can prove it. So there you are, multi, I believe, trillion-dollar industries about to open up. It sounds fantastical. I have the proof. Audio, video, 1,400 images. 10% of those 1,400, any one of them, 140, any one is prima facie evidence of everything I just said. The others are just circumstantial, but interesting. And I'm just alone who has managed to do this with a laptop computer. Could you imagine the resolution of a professional team? If you knew who is involved with us currently right now, the name and the government agency, you'd already be writing an email. And you can call into the Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900, followed by extension number 514049. You can address the questions that you might have to any of our guests, if you like. Again, 641-715-3900, followed by extension number 514049. We'd like to field your questions and comments. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. What's stopping you? And Robert Ian wraps up the show, brings all the runners across home plate with another must-hear report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Investors preferred the risk-on sectors amid better-than-expected U.S. economic numbers. At the closing bell on Friday, the precious metals were off just a touch. The yellow metal gave back about $34, settling around $1,300, a solid close. Silver finished off a bit, about 66 cents at $15.26, while the XAU precious metal shares were off as well a touch, about 6%, $5 at $74. Black gold, though, tread water quite well, off just $1.46, $2.55, 2.5% at $57.80 a barrel, still way off those lows of 42 from a few months ago. And the amazing story, palladium. Hat tip to Chris Blasi for this. All-time record, up another $75 this week, 5% at $15.36, $236 above gold. Unreal. We were looking for parity just a few weeks ago. Platinum, now our must-watch metal for 2 weeks. Added $18 more this week, lofty here, but still at $8.63, I think an incredible bargain relative to palladium. Its best close in about 4 months. The top stories moving the precious metal sector this week. Gross domestic product topped expectations by about 2.6%, while the Labor Department said Friday employers picked up 304,000 jobs in January. That's nearly twice economists' forecasts, and the 100th consecutive month of payroll growth, despite the one-month-long government shutdown and the trade war between the U.S. and its top trading partner. Additional positive news, the unemployment rate remains stubbornly strong, inching higher, of course, to 4%, but that despite the government shutdown, suggestive, I think, of a solidly robust economy. Thriving domestic industries include the retail and restaurant sectors, warehousing, and, of course, construction, according to media reports. Leisure and hospitality. Also, manufacturers picked up 13,000 jobs, despite all the issues going on in the world today. The threat of possible strike, though, in South African mines is helping put a floor underneath the precious metals sector. This is a top supplier of output, of course, in the world. Working conditions unbearable there. Bottom line, precious metals. We continue to agree with Jim Cramer that everybody must have a little bit of gold in portfolio. We might adjust that a bit. The technical position in the precious metals sector cooled off, as I mentioned, but you know, the long-term support, nothing's been breached. I really view this as a temporary pause, possibly even one that refreshes a typical reaction. What I think will be looked back as a time where the deep pockets continue to accumulate their positions in anticipation of much higher gold to silver prices in coming years. If you look at the relative expected return on these underpriced precious metals investments compared to the lofty, overextended sectors out there, I mean, it's an obvious opportunity. Moving on to the Wall Street reports, sunny skies persisted over Wall Street with the major indices posting, wait for it, the 10th consecutive winning week. Investors cheered the better-than-expected domestic jobs numbers and a solid GDP figure. Looking at the New York Stock Exchange on Friday's closing bell, the Dow finished near break-even at 26,026. The S&P actually added 11 points at 28,03, and the NASDAQ picked up 68 points, 75,95, just shy of that benchmark number. The top story moving the markets this week, With the robust economic numbers and renewed risk on trade, investors are watching the Federal Reserve closely. Now, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange Fed Funds futures contracts continue to suggest rates will remain at 2.25 to 2.5% that on the benchmark overnight lending rate for the remainder of this year. But the Fed might just move rates again, become a bit more hawkish if we start to see signs of inflation crop up. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. For the time being, though, things look solid. In Jim Cramer's lightning round on CNBC this week, one interesting stock, Crown Castle International. He called this CCI as a ticker, and that was a buy. He likes it because they could be rolling out the 5G networks. Plus, he likes the Amazon Cloud Services. I'm a big fan of Amazon. It's been a top Alpha Stocks newsletter candidate for, frankly, as long as I can remember, for years. U.S. shares, bottom line. Well, the Greed to Fear Index suggests investors are a touch over-optimistic here, but not terribly so yet. From a technical perspective, we are due a consolidation at any time, but, you know, that would be viewed as healthy. And the markets are, for the most part, showing, you know, solid signs of momentum. So, again, I remain cautiously optimistic. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio.
It's just a pleasure to welcome back Professor Burton Malkiel. Really humbling to have him on the show. 12 years now, he is a professor at Princeton University and, of course, the author of the seminal A Random Walk Down Wall Street. Professor Malkiel, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
I understand you've just come out with a new edition to A Random Walk.
Sure. The 12th edition was just published last month, January 2019, and there's a lot of new material in it for investors. Now, in a sense, the basic message has not changed, the basic message being that investors would be very much better off simply buying and holding simple, broad-based index funds than trying to beat the market. And one of the things that I always do in new editions is I keep asking, was this good? Fortunately, the Standard & Poor's Corporation does a very good annual study that they call a SPIVA study. And what SPIVA stands for is Standard & Poor's Indices versus Active Management. In other words, what they do is they compare the average return on an actively managed fund with the return from one of the Standard & Poor's indices. These are available for investors through exchange-traded funds. So what they did in the last report was to show that in any single year, about two-thirds of actively managed funds are outperformed by a simple index ETF. And the ones that beat the market in one year are generally not the ones that beat the market in the next year. And therefore, when you go out 10, 15 years, the data show that about 90% of actively managed funds underperform these widely available low-cost index funds and index ETFs. Now, it's not that it's impossible to beat the market. There are 10% of the funds that do beat the market over a long time, but the ones that do in one period aren't the ones that do it in the next period. It's far more likely if you try to beat the market that you're going to be in the 90% category that does a lot worse. Paul Samuelson had a very good analogy. Suppose that it could be shown that out of 15 alcoholics, one or two of them could be given a drink. They wouldn't have to go cold turkey. You could give them a drink and they would still be fine. And Samuelson then said, even if that was true, you don't want to give them a drink because you'll never know who the one or two are going to be who actually could do it. And in the meantime, you're going to ruin the other 15. So, again, the evidence just gets stronger and stronger. And, of course, that's one of the things that I always do in a new edition. Now, one of the other things that I think readers will find interesting is I have in the book, I mean, this has been in the book from the very beginning. It was first published in 1973, the history of various financial bubbles. You know, at one point in the 1600s in Holland, people paid as much for a single tulip bulb as for a nobleman's castle. This was called the tulip bulb craze. And I've gone through history of what these crazes were and what happened. Earlier editions, I talked about the dot-com bubble, where so many of the dot-com stocks lost 90% or 95% of their value in the early 2000s. So one of the new things is I've got a lot of material on what the present bubble is, the Bitcoin bubble, where when I first began writing about Bitcoin, it was selling for $20,000 a coin. Now it's in the $3,000 to $4,000 range. But again, part of the reason for this is that being swept up in some kind of investment bubble, whenever you think that things are too good to be true, believe me, they are too good to be true. And so I think readers will find very interesting and instructive on Bitcoin. So there's a lot of new stuff in it. I talk about smart beta and factor investing and various things that readers may be reading about. Everything is up to date, and the book remains, I think, a very useful investment guide that has been, I think, extremely helpful for individual investors. I think one of the things, when I get letters and emails from people saying, you know, I did exactly what you said. I started putting small amounts of money into the market periodically through so-called dollar cost averaging. I did nothing but index funds. I've never earned a lot of money in my life, but now as I approach retirement, I have $1 million or $2 million available for retirement. It's that makes me feel really very good about it. And the book remains, I think, a very useful investment guide for the lay investor.
You know, first of all, hat tip, Professor, for having guided millions of investors to the safe path and to the successful path. Also, thank you for that interesting anecdote on Nobel Prize winning economist Professor Samuelson. I wasn't aware of that. You know, the free lunch, Professor, it's not completely free. We still have to pay a tip or a gratuity, if you will, and that is in the terms of ETF expenses. Could you address this issue?
Sure. Let me say, first of all, and this is one of the new things in the book, there fortunately has been enormous competition that has driven down expense ratios within the mutual fund area, that you have the Fidelity now offering index funds at a zero expense ratio. Now, obviously, they've got some ulterior motives in that They're trying to get you into the fold, and they'll make money from you on other things they try to sell you. But just in general, there has been an enormous decline in expense ratios. Now, I think that for an investor who is going to put in maybe $10 a week or $20 a week from his or her paycheck into the market, what I do recommend is that you do it through a mutual fund rather than an ETF for two reasons. There is, in buying an ETF, there's a brokerage charge. Again, the brokerage charges have came down from $10 a transaction to $7. You'll see advertisements of maybe $4 a transaction. But every time you put money in through an ETF, you have a brokerage fee. It may be small, but it's there. The other problem with the ETF way of doing it is you have a hidden fee, namely the spread between the bid price of the ETF and the asked price. If you go to your broker and buy an ETF, you're going to pay the asked price, which is typically higher than the bid price. If you sell, you'll sell it at the bid price. So there are some extra costs in dealing with ETFs, particularly for the person who's dollar cost averaging by putting small amounts in over time. So for that individual, my suggestion is you use the mutual fund, you go to a Vanguard, you go to a Fidelity. Vanguard's fees are essentially down to zero, as well as Fidelity's. That's the better way to do it because there's no transactions charge even for putting small amounts in over time. And I'll tell you the advantage of no matter what the market is doing, just keep putting money in steadily. So when you have a period such as December of last year, when the market was down 20%, you make sure that you put a little money in at that time as well. And over time, there is no question about the fact that this is the way to plan for financial security over your lifetime.
I'd like to highlight, underscore, and embolden everything the professor's just pointed out. The formula that works, you will outperform 90, probably more, I think you'd agree, Professor, 98, 99% who are more active in their investment strategy. As we wrap up, could you share perhaps anything you see on the horizon that you'd like to leave with the listening audience or any other projects that you're working on?
Sure. Let me just say that and again, this is something that I do cover in, people will say, but look, didn't Warren Buffett outperform, which he did for many years? Warren Buffett made a bet with a hedge fund manager that a simple index fund would beat five selected hedge fund groups. The winner was a charity that was Warren Buffett's favorite charity in Omaha. The index fund won handily. And what I think people don't realize is over the last 5 years, even Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway fund was outperformed by the index. And Warren Buffett has directed in his will that his widow simply invest what she receives in simple index funds. For the future, there are certainly a lot of worries in the horizon. Certainly, I worry about a tariff war, do worry about some of the things that are in the headlines of the papers. But, you know, there's always been an enormous amount of uncertainty. And the one thing that I'm absolutely sure about is This is a very strong country. We have overcome political difficulties in the past. We've overcome a lot of division in our country. In the long run, if you believe in America, as I do, there'll be ups and downs. The dollar cost averager will sometimes make a mistake of buying during one of the up times, but the dollar cost averager will also be buying during one of the down times. And over the long pull, if you believe in America as I do, this is the best investment strategy that anyone can think of.
And I think it's safe to say in a decade and beyond, it will likely be proven true that it remains the hallmark of successful investing. Professor Burton Malkiel, thank you so much for making time for us today, sir.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed being with you.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. Goldseek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver medals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, it's just a pleasure to welcome back Bill Murphy from Gata.org and La Metropole Cafe on an interesting week in the market. And how's the weather today in Dallas, Bill Murphy?
It's freezing.
It's
about as cold as it's been all year.
Oh.
Almost in March.
As we approach spring. Well, Bill, market's not quite frozen. A lot going on there. Give us your take.
Well, people know I'm opinionated, but it's the gold cartel doing their thing again. They attacked a week ago, Wednesday. They started taking gold and silver straight down, and I've been talking for weeks about First Notice Day and the March silver contract. And sure enough, silver's gone from 1620 back down to about 1550. Erased the entire bull move from when these so-called commercials began to go short after fleecing the specs being short on the fleece them. They've made a profit on almost every trade.
What's your take on that? What's behind this market action, Bill Murphy?
Well, you know, the gold cartel wants the gold price down in silver, and the open interest had gone berserk, 50,000 contracts in a short period of time, and now they're liquidating the specs long. They just want to get the price down. I'm hoping that my thinking of the physical market being that tight and a big change is still there. That doesn't mean they won't attack, as they've just done.
We had the Fed meeting minutes recently, and it did surprise the markets a bit. I mean, investors weren't quite expecting this Fed stance. We've also seen a return to this risk-on trade as investors just can't get enough of U.S. shares. What do you think?
Well, again, I'm prejudiced, but Secretary Mnuchin said that's what was going to happen back around Christmas when he said that we're organizing the plunge protection team. It's been straight up ever since. End of story. And of course, there are other factors and the change in the Fed outlook and so on. But, you know, it's all been orchestrated and the Fed caved. And, of course, you know, gold and silver are not allowed to reflect that to any great degree.
Let's also talk about this obvious trade war issue. Talks over the weekend, I believe it was Friday, with China, the White House. Is this a non-event to you, or does this have teeth? And just what do you think it means for the precious metals?
Well, it's this way, that way, this way, that. It's going on forever, and it's so tedious. It's a big deal, of course, but it's very tedious. But it's hard to say what it's going to mean because nobody seems to know what's really going to occur.
Obviously, it's a factor. We don't know exactly how big of a factor it is. You know, one of our recent guests, Michael Pinto, pointed out that he and Dr. Stephen Leib, they're not terribly concerned by the trade war. They seem to think that it would really have to roll on substantially for 6 to 12 more months at least, that we'd have to see that 15% bump up on $200 billion in imports, of course, from mainland China, before that really impacted our trading partners and or our domestic output.
Well, you know, in terms of gold, there's a lot of the comment, it's all well said, but so what? I mean, the fundamentals that should have sent gold much higher for years haven't meant a thing. The only thing, in my opinion, that matters is whether the gold cartel is running short of enough physical gold to keep the price down. And I'm hoping that that's what has occurred these past months. And I've heard reports of it for some time, and then Ross Norman of Sharps Pixley confirmed that the gold market's very tight, and if they're really starting to hit the wall there like they just did in palladium, we've got some good times coming. But the rest of these fundamentals haven't meant a thing. I mean, gold's gone up, as you know, without the dollar doing a thing.
Great segue into palladium. The shiny metal palladium, I mean, this thing, Bill Murphy, I'll bet you remember what it was trading between $200, $300, $400 an ounce. Recently eclipsed the yellow metal. Last week we were looking at least $50 to $100 above gold. We've never seen that before. Platinum did show some signs of life, especially last week, but in no way is closing the gap between palladium and platinum. I'm going to guess we have still at least a $500 gap. Platinum well below palladium. That's just an inversion of the typical market. Do you have any comments?
Well, yes. It's a precursor of what's coming for gold and silver, I think. And they can't do anything about the platinum situation, pardon me, palladium situation because of supply issues. Again, that's what I think is in the process of occurring in gold. And in my opinion, once gold takes off, as that, you know, physical supply issue becomes a bigger and bigger deal, all of a sudden the silver guys are going to wake up and everyone's going to want the available physical silver, and silver will explode out of nowhere. And that's what I think's coming.
Bill Murphy, I think we've just accidentally stumbled, or maybe it was your intention, onto the solution. What is done with the yellow metal and the white gold, platinum? They're hoarded. They're stockpiled. They're rarely used in industrial applications. So now let's flip that on its head. Palladium, not stockpiled for the most part until recently. Silver, not stockpiled. Used and consumed because it's relatively inexpensive. Supply and demand, highly inelastic. It wasn't stockpiled. The markets were caught flat-footed, and a similar eruption could be coming. Your thoughts?
Well, again, I'm prejudiced, and I don't know how J.P. Morgan has kept the price down here for so long, but they've done it. And I just think that if we're correct about the gold physical market being tight, and that's the key factor, and yes, they can attack and take it down like they're doing now and break trend lines, it's not going to hold, and they won't have the supply to keep doing what they're doing, and we're going to start going up again. And that, when gold takes off, will spook the silver people, which is such a tiny market, as you well know. And all of a sudden, everyone's going to go after supply. And when that happens, you're correct. I think silver's going to explode this year.
Two things I'd like to ask you. Firstly, do you expect a force majeure? I mean, when you start to talk about people going after supply, we've already made it clear supply and demand highly inelastic, and available stockpiles are limited. If we can go by most of the sources that we've heard here on the show, especially Rob Kirby, you know, up in Canada, he deals in size. He says there's not much. And by the way, you know, of course, the Russian central bank, Putin there is stockpiling silver. This is one of the first times that I'm aware of in decades where actual central bankers decided to diversify among their precious metals. So you may be onto something here. Then the second point that I think you raised, that's our fine friends at JPM. As I'm sure you know and you've written about extensively and talked on the show, now in their bank vaults, you know, literally under the building,
They let the silver price go up to near 50 in 2011. The open interest on the COMEX was 135,000 contracts all the way up to near the end. In other words, they weren't there. Now, until recently, the silver open interest went up to 224,000 contracts. It's J.P. Morgan and their allies doing everything they can to suppress the price. And I don't know whether it's to help them with gold or whatever, but this has gone on forever, and it's got to end sometime, and hopefully it's sooner rather than later. But it's they do it over and over again. You got First Notice Day in March silver. Sure enough, the silver price plummets. They're forcing the specs out. They just do the same thing, and they keep getting away with it. And it's aggravating, to say the least, but when it ends, it's going to be explosive, I think.
Do you care to maybe speculate on just how this plays out? I know you've talked about it occurring, this end game, this, of course, mad dash into silver. Can you also maybe make a case that this might be a more steady ascent where we run to 27 to 30, we taper for a while, all the shorts come in, they get excited, and we run to 39, 45, build some momentum, and just plows through 50, 49, 50 like it wasn't even there, and then we slice up to 75, shorts again pile in, and they are disappointed as we top three figures. How does that play out in Bill Murphy's book?
Sounds good. Waiting too long for that. It's coming, Chris. It's just we got to see a sign of a change, and as I mentioned earlier, I think that the physical gold market's going to be the key. That follows palladium, and the next thing you know, the silver shorts, when the buyers come in and want the physical supply that's there, and the next thing you know, out of nowhere, silver just explodes.
Last word to Bill Murphy at Gotta.org, and of course, La Metropole Cafe. Why don't you bring the ball into the end zone? Tell everybody a little bit more about your sites, what they can find, and just why they need to bookmark.
Well, you can go to Gotta.org, and Chris Powell does a great job, and they can get on his list. And I've had La Metropole Cafe going for 20 and a half years now, and people can sign up for a two-week free trial and see it is of interest. And we've got a lot of excitement coming, Chris. It's been a rough few years, but that's going to change.
It sure looks like it. I mean, that's the tenor of the markets. I think you'd agree. I mean, we're seeing even the XAU come alive. And I'm sure you'll recall back in, what was it, 2001, 2002, even 2003, it was really the XAU that seemed to lead us out of those doldrums, those 20-year doldrums. So I like seeing some of these levered plays picking up companies, all good signs. There's no new big finds on the horizon. You know, CNBC totally agrees with you. He's calling for 1,400 to 1,500 gold. You know, I mean, the darling of Wall Street agrees with La Metropole Cafe and Midas.org. Bill Murphy, always the best stuff. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chris. Anytime.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. OneGold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. OneGold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals distributed ledger and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. According to the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, Illinois' debt to pensions has ballooned after years of underfunding state pension plans. Over the course of the past week, the state of Illinois announced that as part of its plan to address the state's $134 billion debt to its pension funds, a plan, by the way, that also includes raising taxes and the possibility of handing government assets, like office buildings, over to the retirement system. The proposed plan would include the sale of $2 billion of bonds in order to inject much-needed cash into the state's retirement system. The $2 billion of cash would be intended to merely supplement the state's annual contribution, not be used to cover it, in what can be described only as a bet, and a risky one at that, that investment earnings will reduce what the state actually owes. In the early 2000s, Governor Blagojevich implemented a record $10 billion debt sale. Then from 2005 to 2008, the state did not make adequate payments into the retirement funds and added another $12 billion to Illinois' unfunded retirement obligations. More bonds were subsequently sold, $3.5 billion in 2010 and $3.7 billion in 2011. But what happens if borrowed money that is invested doesn't spit off enough surplus to cover rising obligations? In a Bloomberg article on this subject, a managing partner at Axios Advisors was quoted as saying, "All these gimmicks with the pension bonds and trying to transfer state assets into the pension funds, it seems more like an accounting gimmick than a true funding mechanism." One of the questions that has constantly been asked on this broadcast for over a decade is, how do you solve a debt crisis with more debt? Or with more economic variables? Or more risk? The short answer is that you don't. Confiscation of purchasing power through surreptitiously calculated inflation, higher taxes to, quote, solve the problem, and creatively imaginative ways to continue borrowing from the future to pay today's and yesterday's obligations and promises which were broken long ago. All of these actions, one by one, and in their totality, will do nothing more than continue the erosion of your standard of living. These actions and attempts at providing solutions are mere disguises to hide a bankruptcy that occurred long ago and yet still remains to be declared. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
So glad you're back with us at GoldSeek.com Radio. Today's featured guest, Chris Blasi from NeptuneGlobal.com. Chris Blasi, president of Neptune Global, founder of the PMC Ounce Rate Index, also a cryptocurrency analyst. Welcome back, Chris Blasi.
Thank you, Chris. Great to be on again.
It's great to have you back, and it's probably a good time because there's been a lot of volatility in our favorite precious metals sector, and we know you keep your finger on the pulse. Give us an idea of your take, please, on whether or not we could get that bounce in gold and silver.
You know, obviously over the last 2 weeks, we've had a lot of volatility more to the downside. You know, preceding that, we had a long protracted period of the precious metals trading sideways. And that, you know, that's the worst environment. It does not inspire investors, either those who feel confirmation when metals are moving up or those looking for a good buying opportunity when they pull back. Now, actually, in the last 2 weeks, we were very busy. There were some folks selling, but there were actually some very large investors expanding their positions. So, you know, they're firmly convinced that precious metals and gold have a very positive future. And they just saw it as an opportunity. Now, our sense is this, that the fall is going to be a time that a lot of the fundamentals and a lot of the pending events that we're looking for to be a boost and a catalyst to help propel the precious metals prices are going to take place. They generally don't happen in the summer. And that's the nature of all markets, even the stock market, right? The fall is when you see the action. And, you know, people always think it's October. It actually tends to be September. So we think with the midterms coming up, there's going to be a confluence of revelations made, you know, that are going to be very politically oriented. They're going to be very destabilizing and going to shake the faith in markets. And it's going to be positive for the precious metals.
Does the dollar come into play here? Are you factoring in the dollar strength and continued rate hikes at the Fed?
What you're going to see is we've known that the dollar has rallied recently, which is, you know, one of the things that, you know, people point out is putting pressure, downward pressure on the metals. I think the dollar is going to reverse course come the fall. I think, you know, a lot of things are going to fall into place, whether it's the dollar pulling back, the Fed, you know, having to change their tone and their language and, you know, their outlook. And I think there's other things that are going to be actually more geopolitical and domestically political that are going to help destabilize things, which will be the catalyst for knocking the dollar down, putting some of the things into place that are going to help propel the precious metals.
Very good. We also know that you keep an eye on platinum and related metals as well. Any thoughts there?
Yes. Something that I think is extremely interesting is that the tightness for platinum and palladium. Still the delivery times on for us, you know, as a dealer, tier one dealer, you know, we're getting the gold and silver we need. And, you know, delivery schedules are a little bit elongated because despite all the selling, there isn't a big pile of gold and silver readily available. But it's even that tightness is much more pronounced than platinum and palladium. So, you know, again, that's pointing to when things finally start to fall into place, that there's a tremendous amount of pent-up, you know, price drivers for platinum and palladium. So, you know, it's real. It's actually been going on with platinum and palladium for several months now. So, you know, the platinum and palladium price has been knocked down. You know, you were kind enough to mention the PMC ounce, the precious metals composite, which there's the PMC index, which is looking at the overall performance of the precious metals market by a weighted allocation of gold, silver, platinum, palladium. But there's also the investable product, the PMC ounce, and it has platinum and palladium in it. So we always think that for a person to establish a position also in platinum palladium, it's much more logical with the PMC ounce because it's logically weighted. You know, a person shouldn't be greedy and just say, well, I heard, you know, some good news for platinum palladium and just pile and go all in them. You know, I would still say you still have a nice measured, balanced portfolio across the precious metals, and the PMC ounce provides that. And we do see a lot of investors coming in because they like the having that exposure to the platinum palladium, and they see and they sense a lot of potential for the platinum palladium in the next leg up.
And moving on to the cryptocurrencies, you also keep an eye on the crypto space, trying to hammer out a bottom in Bitcoin. Ethereum has suffered 70% losses at least from its peak price from just 6 to 8 months ago. Do you believe, though, in the long-term promise by crypto adherents that we have an encryption and transparency and decentralization theme that will be central to the modern economy over the next 10 years? And how might investors start to position themselves with these discounted prices?
So 3-4 months ago, when we were the ones that, we didn't say we didn't denigrate them, but we cast a little doubt that people did not understand what they were getting involved in. They were also conflating a cryptocurrency with blockchain, right? Blockchain has not cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency just uses the blockchain, you know. So there was so much disinformation, and of course there was so much, you know, we were so blind enthusiasm, and we were vilified, right, for even casting a doubt that the cryptocurrency wouldn't go to a million, as some people were forecasting, or Bitcoin would go to a million. So, of course, a lot of questions have come up about cryptocurrencies. A lot of those questions still have not been answered, and now the cryptocurrencies have fallen to a level, as things get sorted out. I don't believe it's imminent that going up. I also think there's a big difference between using blockchain technology and processes for businesses. That doesn't necessarily mean blockchain being deployed and embraced by businesses to use as part of their processes. That doesn't automatically make cryptocurrencies go up. They're two completely different things. I also think digital money, or like cryptocurrencies, will be co-opted by governments in the future. And to me, that's not a good thing. So as far as, is this a good time to position in the cryptocurrencies? I think there's still so many questions out there. I don't see this as the same thing as, you know, gold pulling back and providing a buying opportunity. That I do not see as the same situation for the cryptocurrencies.
So you're not as enthusiastic on their prospects right now relative to the precious metals?
No, I'm not. It's even an item. It's even a product that's trying to find out what it is. Is it a currency or is it just a speculative investment, right? I mean, if it's going to function as a currency, right, it wouldn't have the volatility that it has. You can't run a business, you know, accepting a form of payment that you can turn around right after you receive it. And then next thing you know, it's lost 5-10% of it. If you look at the euphoria and the mania, you know, prior to the cryptos pulling back, you know, no one would want to talk about some, you know, basic things about it, right? How safe are they with the exchanges being raided and your Bitcoins being stolen and no way to recover them? I mean, these are really serious questions. And everyone just wanted to discount it because they were excited. They're onto something that would make them a lot of money quick. It's no different than the dot-com mania, and I worked in big tech at the time. You know, all because the dot-com mania and companies like Pets.com, which went to oblivion because they were ridiculous business plans, that did not mean the Internet wasn't viable and growing. I think people forget the Internet is bigger than it was in 2000, but you still have the tech wreck for all dot-com companies that were just being bid up in price because they said they were moving their business to the Internet, but it was still a poor or ridiculous business plan. Now, there's a commonality. You know, blockchain is not cryptocurrency, and digital currency will come about, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done, and it's it's a work in progress, and it's going to take time before I believe there's truly viable, relatively safe, you know, trustworthy digital currency that has a degree of stability that can function as a currency and not just a speculative trade.
No, I think the dot-com parallel with the cryptos, especially up until, you know, December of 2017 last year, it really holds water. I mean, I was there, cut my teeth in the late 90s, early 2000s as well. The IPO craze, there's just too many similarities. The market price behavior was maybe, you could argue, even more pronounced on many levels. And while I can easily make the fundamental case for institutional money, supposedly in the next 6 to 8 months flowing in like we've never seen into Bitcoin and their related currencies, that adoption rates are still relatively low in the maybe the single digit level, and most markets aren't mature until you get much higher, 20 to 50% or more. Markets discount these activities sometimes 6 months to 12 months ahead, which means all of those could be, as any, I think, wise student of the market, especially an active trader, knows, you know, the markets are forward-looking, and they've likely already anticipated much of the potential gains that others are now calling for could be, as they say, baked into the cake. You know, you have your solid precious metals core, your diversified portfolio, and maybe a modicum of the cryptos, maybe 1 to 3%, 5%, so that if the trend continues, you can participate, but you don't have oversized exposure.
Sure. Actually, I'm going to go back to a parallel, right? So I think people can draw parallels. There's another parallel to the dot-com, meaning I believe that digital currency will be coming about and will be a big part of the marketplace. Now, the timing, whether it's 6 months, a year, 2 years, I don't know. But there's another part to it. It's just, again, let's use the analogy of the dot-com mania and the Internet. The Internet thrived, but in 2000, when a lot of the dot-com stocks started collapsing, it doesn't mean all because the Internet was going to be have the success it had 18 years later that any of those companies would be viable investment, meaning it doesn't mean that the cryptocurrencies that are out there right now will necessarily be viable, even though digital currency may be, but it may not be the ones that are available right now. So that's why there's a degree of risk, and that's why, like the old adage, are you trying to catch a falling knife?
Keep in mind, the first mover advantage is, I think, a little more unique than in the dot-com space. Ethereum, maybe 5-10 years from now, may not be the number two crypto asset. I think you have to be careful drawing too close a parallel between, let's say, pets.com and Ethereum or Bitcoin, or even Facebook and MySpace, which is now the classic Harvard Business School case, if you will. The coders, the founders, the developers, and then the infrastructure that it requires. For instance, Bitcoin is probably the better example. Infrastructure and developers, probably the best development team in the world, as well as Ethereum. Maybe a little narrow focus to think that that talent, that pool of talent, and that, let's call it, technological base would suddenly shift over to maybe Stellar or Tezos, any of the other competing blockchains. That's not to say that Bitcoin and Ethereum will remain, you know, the Amazon.com and the Google of the future.
I guess I'm looking at it from a different perspective, right? I'm looking at it as an industry. I'm looking at it as, while a lot of people were enamored by Bitcoin, they didn't understand it, right? They used terms like distributed ledger and all that, but didn't understand what that means. There was also, if you recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there was this believing that, you know, the Bitcoin was this own unique thing that was free of any of the risk in anything that is kind of a man-made, like a fiat currency. At the end of the day, there's still coders and developers, and it still has to be upgraded. So it kind of takes the veneer off that it does, there is software behind it. There is a lot of parallels to existing things and with the associated risk. It doesn't mean they're not going to be viable. But one thing, you know, and it is good for an investor to understand what they're getting into, right? I mean, a guy like Buffett, everyone likes to quote Warren Buffett, and what does he always say? He goes, he never buys into an industry he doesn't understand. That's why he says he likes kind of basic things like railroads and insurance companies. If they really don't understand the technology behind it, and I'm not going to ever believe that there's zero risk in anything that requires coders and all that, or, you know, they're not vulnerable, that these coders are so superior that they can develop product using basically software that is completely bulletproof. It just doesn't happen. My point is, if a potential retail smaller investor doesn't understand, then when they're picking out, they're kind of, you know, there are 300 plus, right, cryptocurrencies out there, and if they're looking at some of the other ones, then they're really just throwing darts against the wall. And I understand what you say that, you know, Bitcoin would probably be around, even though it may not be the stellar one. Yeah, I still think there's a degree of you're just trying to catch a falling knife at this stage. And so that's why I'm not as, you know, I guess, as supportive of that it needs to be part of a portfolio. But, you know, that's just a personal feeling. I just feel that an individual should at least understand the basics of what they're getting invested in. And if it's really completely foreign to them and they really don't understand, you know, why an investment is going to be viable, except that this is probably the future. I don't know what it is really, but I'm still going to go into it. You know, that's just not something I get behind really enthusiastically. But for someone who's a little more knowledgeable like yourself, right, with a background and understanding, you know, to me, I'm sure you could feel much more comfortable and it would make more sense.
Well, you know, that really is the challenge, isn't it? When you're dealing with any sector that is so unique and obviously so novel, there's very little track record. Of course, venture capitalists, folks who take risks and who speculate on new ventures, they like to see some type of track record. I think we could sit here all day and pontificate on either side of the ledger. For every pro, there does seem to be a negative. Bitcoin is only now, as I said, becoming adopted. Institutions just getting interested. Trading desks opening up on the likes of the top bankers, including JP Morgan, Goldman, etc. But in the final analysis, catching the proverbial dagger requires a certain type of trading mentality that most people are not, you know, well equipped to manage. So on a forward basis, would you then advocate building, as prices reached more reasonable floors, a small holding? Or do you think it's still just too soon? In other words, are you looking for a particular capitulation moment before issuing a buy again on the crypto?
I just want to see the industry mature more. I'm not looking at it as a price target, and I'm talking about what I would feel is for the typical individual investor who really is not in a position like a institutional investor such that maybe has a certain amount of funds that they say, look, you know, we go into a lot of high-risk things. Certain things go to zero, and certain things we knock the cover off the ball. And that when they net it all out, they do quite well. I mean, that generally isn't a good strategy for an individual. I don't think that if a little bit of time passes and we see a little more, like I said, maturity, and we see a little more, you know, when it comes to things are always going to be regulated, and we get more definitive decisions by things like the SEC and such, about how the cryptos are going to be handled or regulated, I don't feel like a little bit of waiting time is going to put a retail investor behind the eight ball. So still very volatile right now, probably still, you know, it could take off from here, but it could also go down somewhat. And if it was to start to climb and it's climbing on what appears to be, you know, solid fundamentals, I think it's okay if, you know, an individual maybe misses out on a couple hundred points, 1,000, 2,000 points of Bitcoin. I think once it proves itself, then it would have a long run, and maybe missing out on just the first couple steps isn't so detrimental.
Well, you know, as a solid believer in the blockchain phenomenon and, of course, decentralization, I'd say firstly for folks who have a longer-term focus, if you're interested in Bitcoin and you don't want to try to be a bottom fisher, as they call it, you know, maybe wait for one of those recent swing highs to be eclipsed, 8,500 or 10,000, and see if price stabilizes and then, you know, swing for the previous former all-time record of 20,000. Those might be interesting points to start to build a portfolio. But another little caveat in here, as exciting as 2017 was in the ICO arena, there really wasn't the due diligence that we would traditionally see in investment banking firms. Back in 1998 through the year 2000, people really got excited about the initial public offerings that were essentially managed or brought public by the big names. Okay, so it was Goldman and Morgan. When you saw those names on the prospectus, you knew that this was probably going to be a really interesting IPO. And we didn't have that type of oversight in hundreds of these companies that are now trading somewhat actively on the crypto exchanges. So wouldn't you agree that should be a big red flag for anyone except for the day trader and the speculator?
Well, sure. I mean, it's an opaque industry, right? It's a very opaque industry. There's other things like, you know, even the fact that the exchanges, right, where a Bitcoin, right, would be stolen. You know, there's no way of recovering your money, right? It's just gone, right? I mean, it's unlike, you know, it's still, at least if you're, you know, you're a bank or your broker's account and someone pilfers your account, you know, and it's not your fault, you're going to be reimbursed and made whole. And, you know, these are basic protections that an individual expects, you know, in a mature institutional market where there's at least some degree of rule of law. You know, we know what the Wild West, right? And everything was opaque. Everything was a mystery. That's generally not a healthy environment for an individual. Again, it doesn't mean that it's not going to mature and get to a place, but that's a little more, I guess, appropriate for an individual to be parking their hard-earned money. But yes, it was a Wild West more than it was in the dot-com bust. In some respects, it was easier to understand what the internet was than a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, what exactly blockchain is and what exactly Bitcoin is. And again, there's this conflating of blockchain with digital currency, right? One just uses the other, but they're not the same thing, right? So if blockchain is going to be a widely deployed technology, which it is going to be, no doubt about it, it doesn't mean everything that uses blockchain necessarily is going to be successful.
So many times we seem to see the comparison of, let's say, Ethereum as, you know, digital silver and Bitcoin as digital gold, but it's really not a fair parallel because obviously Ethereum is programmable money. It should not be even construed, I think, as money at all. It's just a contract system, and many of the contracts have extremely unique characteristics. For instance, you know, the Ethereum request comment, or ERC 721, I believe, is the currency asset contract, which obviously facilitates dApps such as CryptoKitties and the other assets, you know, we believe will be $100 billion market at the very least in the next 5 to 10 years. So trying to compare that with the more digital gold-like store of value, throwing darts at them without understanding the subtle nuances might be speculative at best. All right. Would you give advice to our listeners who still have some of that Bitcoin euphoria, that maybe these calls for $250,000, $2 million, even $10 million recently, we really need to be careful?
Those are some pretty aggressive numbers. Generally, that on its own should scare somebody. If it's true, I'll go back to what I said before. If it truly is going to go to $250,000, right? I'm just using this as an example. I don't believe this is happening, and I'm not recommending anything. But I'll go back to when I said, would it really hurt an investor to wait a little bit and see some maturity and some more fundamental proof that it's viable and this not, you know, a speculative thing that you'll go into and get wiped out the next day? Meaning if you're going to $250,000 and it's roughly 6,000 now, getting into it at $20,000 on the way to $250,000 would hardly be detrimental, right? A couple thousand dollars just to see some proof, see some maturity, see some, you know, stability, and it becomes a little less opaque, is probably worth a little bit of a wait.
It might be worth addressing one of the characteristics, though, that makes the crypto domain unique, the idea that there really aren't a lot of alternatives that are liquid and easily digitally transferred. I mean, obviously, we're big proponents of gold at Goldseek. Even silver, we think, is still a viable money and currency and will be probably again someday. Very difficult to cross borders, to travel around the world. We were talking with Tim Draper, Silicon Valley Bitcoin enthusiast, talked about a recent transaction involving, I think it was close to $19 million via Bitcoin. Total cost was $1.70 on the transaction. This was to an entirely different continent. It all occurred within, I believe it was less than an hour, and they then compared it with the cost in the neighborhood of $10,000 if they'd used the traditional bank wiring and could have required a week for confirmation. So, I mean, there really are some unique characteristics. Do you worry, though, that the traditional financial institutions might usurp that and establish their own competing crypto?
I've always felt that was exactly what would happen, that it will be taken over by them. It will become the law that you have to deal in current cryptocurrencies or digital currencies, you know, ruled by the government as the only ones you can do because they're going to be regulated and overseen by institutions that they support and that they'll make something outside of that illegal, and you'll have to operate in the black market with that. I understand it's great to drive down the cost of transferring money. I mean, we have to deal with bank wires too, and we think they're ridiculously expensive for what they are. And it would be great to you know, take typical bank wire costs of, you know, for $20-$25 domestically, right, we know, and, you know, 40 plus internationally, and make that for the few pennies it should be, because it's really just an electronic transfer. And that would be great. And, you know, they may adopt the platform and the protocols for doing that with a digital currency. The one thing we will give up, there's a lot of things also about digital currency where it always, that has negatives, right, tracking what you do and such. So, you know, I think that, you know, even though there may be some things that are very attractive about digital currency, but going to a world where everything just becomes digitized, that from our what's called our libertarian streak, I have a lot of reservations about being happy about that.
You know, in the industrialized nations, we have so many competing alternatives to, you know, the crypto type of arrangement, more traditional means for financing and transfer of wealth. Outside the U.S., you know, obviously, where we see things like suddenly, I don't know, in India, you know, Prime Minister Modi just gets a wild hair and says, you know, I think I might just remove all paper currency from the market today. Good luck. In a nation where 80% of people regularly transact in paper and coin currency compared to the United States, where it's maybe 30-40%. So these type of activities happen. Venezuela, another glaring example. Anybody who had access to cryptos is in a better position today in a currency that's been deflated by over 1,000,000% within a 12 to 24 month period. Chris Blasi, any parting comments for our listeners?
Back to the metals. I'm sure both a lot of investors are a bit frustrated, right? Expecting with very sound fundamentals that, you know, the metals should be higher than they are at this point. And this year has been somewhat disappointing. 2016 and 17 were obviously good years. I don't think a lot of people realize that they were pretty solid, good, solid years. I'm talking more people who are sitting outside the metals and haven't taken a position yet. We believe that this fall you're going to see the stability and the resumption of its of the rise up, and that's for a host of reasons. Hope they all just feel comfortable and hold tight, and you know that they have a great fall with their precious metals positions. And you know, if they ever have any questions about what we do and the power of diversification across the four metals, because there is a, they are not the same and they do not move in lockstep, we'd be happy to discuss, you know, the advantage to being properly diversified within the precious metal space.
Would you like to tell people more about what they can find at Neptune Global?
A great way to learn about us is to visit our website, neptuneglobal.com. You know, you can learn about the PMC ounce. You could do, we have a tool called the PMC calculator, which you access from the homepage. It lets you do a simulated trade. It's all in real time, but the power of it is you see what the diversification is, what metals you own and what quantities, and it shows you what percentage of your investment is going into each of those metals. So it really helps a person to visualize the logic and the power of the product. Of course, you know, we have contact, our phone number and such on the site. We love to answer questions for people. We also like to share that the PMC ounce is now being sold by other dealers. It's getting so much traction and such wide adoption that it is actually available for other dealers now. And for anyone who thinks it's new and they're concerned, the PMC ounce has actually been around since 2008. So it's got a 10-year track record, and it received a patent in 2013. So, you know, it's a physical precious metals offering, so it's got all the benefits and of physical precious metals, but trades in real time, as if you're trading an ETF, the real thing. It's been doing tremendously well, and it's doing what it's designed to do, which is it's not about beating the market, because it's not an actively traded fund, and it's not a fund at all, but it's a diversified physical precious metals position that mitigates some of the extreme volatility that you experience if you're in just one or two of the metals, because of the blended return of the metals and the weighting of the holding. That you know, you're capturing the blended return with managing that risk, and that's the risk of higher volatility.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how the markets play out, in particular the precious metals and the cryptos, over the next, 6 months. So we'll look forward to hearing more comments from you at Neptune Global.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd like to say the adherence to the metals and such, they deserve it. They've waited a long time, and I really appreciate getting on the show and a chance to share these ideas with you, Chris. Wish all your listeners, great fall. Hope their investments work out well for them. Take care now.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.